Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week, and we always love it when he's here, is Casey Seiler, state editor and Capital Bureau chief for the Albany Times Union. Well, Casey, your hand is on the throttle. I'm delighted you're here.
It's good to be here, Alan. Thanks for having me.
Let's start by saying we've just had some major elections. As we speak, we're not exactly sure about some of the races, but let's go to New York City, which is, after all, half the state in terms of population, and talk about what happened there. What do you got?
Well, I think certainly the most exciting race was the mayoral primary, which once Anthony Weiner got into it, became a subject of national interest and or ridicule, depending upon how you want to look at it. And the big surprise there, especially over the course of the last 6 weeks, 2 months or so, was the surge by Bill de Blasio, who's the current public advocate.
What is the public advocate? Why don't you tell everybody?
It's not quite controller. It's kind of one of these unique New York City positions where I guess you could call it an ombudsman for city government. I think that's probably the best way to go about it. De Blasio managed to sell himself as the most believable non-Bloomberg candidate, the most compelling turning of the page from 12 years of Mike Bloomberg. And preceding that, 8 years of Rudy Giuliani. And a major surprise for Christine Quinn, the Speaker of the City Council, who really found herself swamped by essentially becoming the Bloomberg proxy in the race. Early on, when she was ahead, not way ahead, but ahead, she was really jumped by many of the other candidates. That kind of tore her down. And then de Blasio really went on a run, had a terrific ad in which his son Dante de Blasio is married to an African-American woman, and they have two children who are lovely and charming. And this ad, I think, did two things. It pointed up his kind of multicultural family demographic appeal. His wife back in college, I believe.
And de Blasio's wife.
De Blasio's wife after that was, for a period of time, gay. And so there was that demographic group that was appealed to as well. I think that undercut Christine Quinn, who is
would have been the first lesbian mayor.
Correct, yes, in addition to being the first woman mayor.
Yeah, sure.
And I think that it raised the likability factor for de Blasio in a primary where, you know, not a lot of people vote, and things can turn on questions of likability.
And it is extraordinary that Bloomberg, I think, blew it quite badly when he decided to imply or state that the de Blasio campaign was racist because he had injected his son, Dante, who you referred to.
Yeah, right, and his daughter and his wife into the race.
Into the race, Casey, as if every one of these campaigns doesn't have a Jewish desk and an Italian desk and an African-American desk.
Oh, the idea that in a New York City mayoral race, there wouldn't be appeals, whether personally or in terms of policy, to the various ethnic constituencies is just ridiculous. And, you know, Bloomberg did it. Every candidate does it. That's how you get elected. But claiming that using his family was in some way racist. And I have to bear in mind that this was an interview with New York Magazine that Bloomberg did, I think, more than a month ago.
Right.
And it really just came out in the last couple of days before, I think it was on Friday or maybe Saturday, that it went out over the internet. And immediately everybody kind of fell on it and criticized it, and it sort of reminded everybody what they didn't like about Bloomberg. There were a lot of things
to like,
but his tendency to kind of run off at the mouth occasionally obnoxious ways was not something that people are going to look back with fondness.
So now you needed 40%. To avoid a runoff. At this point, and Bill Thompson, the former controller of the city, who gave Bloomberg a hard time in the last race, he almost won.
Yeah, amazing, surprising run.
Right, and he's not exactly Mr. Personality, Thompson. That's Alan speaking, in case you would never say that. Now, what does he do, de Blasio? Because for the last 20 years, there's been a Republican mayor, very blue, 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 New York City. So what does he do now? He's got to become more conservative. He turns to the right.
Well, I think Loda, Joe Loda, who now we know is going to be the Republican candidate, came out and gave a very strong, almost stern speech saying what he planned to do in the 2 months remaining before the general election. And he said that he was going to do his best to rebut the notion that, you know, New York City is a tale of two cities, riven by income inequality, and that he was going to hit the idea that a Democratic mayor would hand the city off to special interests, meaning unions, basically, although he probably won't say it. The implication would, of course, be minority communities. He came out very strong in support of stop and frisk, as he referred to it, stop, question, and frisk, which is, of course, a very controversial tactic used by New York City police that disproportionately affects minority youth who are stopped and searched and can end up getting a charge put on them that hangs with them for a long time. Governor Andrew Cuomo has attempted to reform this technique. It's become the subject. Now the city is facing oversight by a federal judge or a federal master, I think the term is, to oversee the city's use of this tactic. And if Loda runs on stop and frisk, I don't exactly know how that's going to work out for him.
Well, let's put it this way. People in some groups vote disproportionately. So we know, for example, Republicans vote more than Democrats. It's one of the ways they win. And usually you can see money as being one of the factors. In other words, the more you got, the more likely you are to exercise the franchise, you know, and to vote. And the middle class always has to make a decision, don't they, which is, am I interested with those below me or am I interested with those above me? And that's how Republicans, I think, keep winning in New York City.
No, you're absolutely right. But you have to remember that in the five boroughs, the voter registration disparity is something like 5-1, I believe.
20 years of Republicans, I may point out.
No, you're absolutely right. But I think you have to you have to look at the candidates that people have had on the plate, especially during the two kind of turnings of the tide in 93 and 2001. In other words, consider the alternative. And is Loda going to be able to make de Blasio unpalatable enough to boost his own chances? You have to remember that Loda was deputy mayor under Giuliani, who, despite the fact that, you know, we're talking on the commemoration of 9/11 now, despite his performance on 9/11, Giuliani is not a beloved figure for his mayoralty, and since then has not exactly charmed people anymore, as you can see from the failure of his various presidential runs.
I know this is a little diversion, but I can't help it, and I apologize for it, Casey. No, but it was so interesting to remember that when 9/11 happened, Giuliani was still the mayor. Bloomberg was coming along. Giuliani said, you know, this is a terrible crisis. I need more time to be mayor. And Bloomberg said, absolutely not during that time.
Right.
Then when Bloomberg has two terms, which was prescribed by the people of New York in the voting booth, he says, no, I need a third term in order to make it right. And along goes Christine Quinn along with it because she gets to stay for another term also.
And that was, it was seen as the kind of the turning point for her. There was a very good analysis last week in the New York Times of exactly how Quinn came to that decision. And it wasn't just Bloomberg who was placing pressure on her. It was, of course, other members of her own
city council
who were going to be term limited out of office. And so that was one of the hydraulics that was pressing her to support the mayor. But yeah, we're talking about two calamities, you know, the 9/11 attacks. And for Bloomberg, it was the 2008 economic collapse that, so he said, led him to want to take on a third term.
So let's now go to the gorilla in the room, and that, of course, is Andrew Cuomo. Now you get a guy who de Blasio looks like he may well be the mayor of New York, and he's a social progressive. Andrew Cuomo is not known for that. So the question then becomes, how do these two guys get along, the governor and the mayor?
Yeah, and you have to remember that de Blasio and Cuomo used to work together. They had a very good relationship back in the 90s, I believe, during Cuomo's HUD days.
And when he was a liberal.
Well, okay.
Some people are going to say I'm cynical there.
Well, and some people would point out the fact, I think conservatives would probably point to the fact that Cuomo sort of the polls swing back and forth on his commitment, or at least his emphasis on various progressive causes. Mm-hmm. You know, I think conservatives would point to the passage of the SAFE Act.
His outstanding moment in office.
You mean the passage of same-sex
yes.
marriage?
No, no.
What?
That too.
Yes.
But the SAFE Act. Which really took some guts.
Well, the two,
that was a profile in courage.
The two progressive summits for Cuomo so far would be the legalization of same-sex marriage in June 2011, right, you know, 6 months after he came into office, and the passage of the SAFE Act earlier this year. The passage of the SAFE Act has proven to be wildly more controversial in conservative circles and even in some
SAFE
more progressive circles.
The Gun Control Act.
Yeah, the Gun Control Act.
But let me ask you a question. Do you think he didn't know that when he did it? Because you had the Connecticut terrible shooting of the school children. Mm-hmm. He comes out and says, we have to do something. And he gets out in front and he does it.
I don't know if he expected that it was going to be as unpopular upstate as it has proven to be. His poll numbers are only now starting to bounce back upstate.
Because he's spending all his time upstate.
Yeah, he's spending a ton of time upstate and pushing policies such as the Startup New York, you know, tax-free zones at state institutions, at state universities and some private institutions. And, of course, the gaming blueprint that we'll be voting on in 2 months would benefit upstate communities for the first, I think it's 7 years of its existence. In other words, the first new casinos would be going upstate as economic development drivers. But to get back to the original question, what does this mean? We were talking about the interview that Bloomberg gave, the accusation that that de Blasio, his campaign was somehow racist or racially tinged because he was putting his family out there. Governor Cuomo last weekend in Buffalo hit back against those comments very, very hard. And though he had been staying out of the Democratic primary, as he had been staying out of, I think, virtually every race, if not every race, he came as close as he has come to offering an endorsement of de Blasio. So.
And also of the mayor of Buffalo, Democratic mayor of Buffalo.
Correct. Yes, that is one of the very few exceptions to the rule. Byron Brown, who won handily.
And he knew it was going to win handily, and therefore
yes.
it was a safe bet. However, now let me take you a little bit to the east, mm-hmm. to Syracuse, New York. Why don't you tell us about what happened there?
Well, Stephanie Miner pulled out an easy win, and if you're approaching the topic of the divide between Stephanie Miner and the governor.
Why don't you just remind everybody, Casey, what that was all
Stephanie
about?
Miner has been very critical of the governor's, what she sees as a lack of him sort of taking the lead in taking on issues, fiscal, you know, the fiscal challenges facing upstate urban areas. She was very critical of the pension smoothing plan that that the governor proposed to lessen the pension costs,
which
for
would allow
upstate
them to basically borrow. She didn't like.
Yeah, to basically put off the big increases in pension costs now and put it off on down the road. That proposal was itself sort of smoothed out before passage, and it became a lot sort of less of a thing. But Stephanie Miner,
I heard
no talk about the governor trying to undercut Stephanie Miner.
Well,
she sailed to victory.
Whoa. I'm not so sure I agree with this. In Buffalo, he endorses the popular mayor, and he had appointed Stephanie Miner, the mayor of Syracuse, as his Democratic state
co-chair. Yeah. Where she remains.
Yes, I understand. Yeah. It would have looked even more bullyish if he had made that change. And now he doesn't endorse her, his own state chair. I'm sorry, Casey, I don't think that's attractive.
Well, okay, but you got to remember, did she need it? And the polls suggested that at no point ever did she need it. And also, if the governor goes there, does that mean that he then is obliged to go around to every,
well,
you know,
he went to Buffalo.
You're right. He went to Buffalo. Does Stephanie Miner have much of a reason to be more ticked off at the governor than she was, you know, last month?
Well, but she gets this terrific vote in Syracuse.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that may have been an anti-bullying vote.
Maybe. I'm not sure. I don't think it was the winning margin, Alan.
Andrew, don't pick on our lady mayor.
I will half agree with you, which is that I think that her strong advocacy for these issues that we're talking about, the issues that have put her in conflict with Andrew Cuomo, helped sort of cast her as a very strong leader. And I think that Syracuse voters responded to that. So I think to that extent, you have a point.
So let's go to the fallout statewide. Are there any signs that the gun issue, which was made Cuomo somewhat unpopular in some of the upstate communities, there were sheriff's races and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anything that we could look at here that might tell us from the election results that we should be aware of?
Well, specifically in Saratoga County, where there was a Republican primary race between Jeff Gildersleeve and Mike Zurlo. And Gildersleeve was seen as something of the insurgent candidate. And he came out and said straight up that as sheriff, he would not enforce the SAFE Act. Zurlo, as we speak, he has a lead. It's likely going to come down to the absentee ballots. But I think you would have to give that race to Mike Zurlo at this point, which the governor can then turn around and say, look, if Republican candidates think that they're going to win by opposing the SAFE Act, the slope is going to be a little bit steeper than that.
So let me go to Elliot Spitzer.
Yeah.
Now, this is a hell of a thing.
It is. It is a hell of a thing. Because
he runs for control of New York City.
Yes, he's running for control of New York City, jumped into the race very, very late,
yeah,
taking Scott Stringer, who is...
Was not exactly Mr. Charisma.
Well, but he was running for New York City controller. Yeah. How exciting do you have to be? And probably thought that he could just sail into it. Now, I think I would make the argument that hanging back in the cut, as it were, almost made it too inviting for Elliot Spitzer to come down and swoop on the race. He did that very late. He was way out in front in a number of polls.
Are you implying that Elliot Spitzer was a raptor? He swooped down, you know, and grabbed the rabbit?
Well, in this instance, yes, yeah. I think you would have to say that. That he saw his opportunity and he took it, without a doubt.
Like Plunkett.
Yeah, and it... Yeah, like Plunkett, exactly. I just got that. The penny just dropped. But as Stringer got more vocal and forceful and really went hard negative on Elliot Spitzer, the race tightened. And also, you have to give the big margin in that race to get at the vote efforts, which Stringer had on his side and Spitzer had to buy.
Yeah, I think we have to talk about that for a moment. It's interesting. Virtually everybody... The three newspapers in New York City. I mean, the Post and the News I can dismiss because I don't know where Mort Zuckerman, the owner of the News, and Murdoch are at any given moment, but I can pretty well guess. They are pretty establishment. But then when you get the New York Times coming down strongly against Spitzer,
mm-hmm,
you get virtually every politician endorsing, as if the memo went out, endorsing Stringer.
I would say the memo went out before that the establishment was going to get on the side of Stringer. Stringer had better relationships with a lot of the lawmakers, a lot of the city officials because of his role as Manhattan borough president. Elliot Spitzer was a guy who burned a ton of bridges and continued to do that kind of over the course
of his... But that's what some people love about him and his campaign, which came close to winning. I mean, he didn't win. He was ahead most of the race, but then, you know, they all came down on him. But it seems to me that what Spitzer's campaign was all about is, look, you loved me when I was attorney general. I took on the big boys. I'll take on the big boys. Stringer won't. I don't know if you ever saw the film Client Number 9.
In
which you get all those guys from AIG and all these other places. Yeah, we got them. You know, the question then is, what do you do if you're a voter in New York City saying, yeah, let's unleash somebody who really will use his clout as city controller and really get in there and fight? Or do we want, you know, a guy who is the same old, same old?
Well, but Stringer, I think, was able to not only hit Spitzer on his troubled personal history,
yes,
which is also troubled official history, but also hit him on the fact that his first, what was it, year and a third as governor were marked by personality conflicts, management bungles by the governor, that he was able to make the case that Spitzer was not only, to borrow an Anthony Weiner line, an imperfect messenger, but also a bad manager, would be a bad manager of an office that has a very important mission.
Let's talk about that, since you mentioned the W word, Anthony Weiner. That's it for him, right? Do you think this is it?
I think so, and I think New Yorkers everywhere hope so. He came out in his concession speech and referred to, we didn't win this time. And as I noted on Twitter, you know, a terrified populace realizes that there could be a next time. But I got to think so. He really revealed himself to be an absolute boob, you know?
Damage.
And absolutely, he had many of his policy ideas were very interesting, but personally, he seemed to take every opportunity to just to act like a real jerk. I could think of a different word, but you wouldn't want it on the radio.
So there is no future for Anthony Weiner, you think?
Hey, listen.
Richard Nixon became president after you weren't going to have Richard Nixon to kick around anymore.
Yeah, but Richard Nixon never had a mountain like this.
Okay.
You know?
And what about Spitzer?
Well, on the question of Weiner, here's what Weiner needs to do now. He needs to go and do something that will redeem himself in the eyes of the voters, which is something that he didn't do in the 2 years between his fall from Congress and now. What does Spitzer do now? I don't know. I mean, he's a real estate executive. He doesn't need to do anything for money.
He came close.
Yeah, but I think it would be the best thing for him to do would be to stay out of the public eye for about 5 years or so. Maybe devote his considerable energies and considerable brain power to a nonprofit venture that would really make a difference in the lives of people. I would say that would be the best thing for Weiner to do either. You know, Americans like genuine attempts at contrition and redemption. And I think that in the case of Spitzer and Weiner, they were seen as being opportunists and to a certain extent phonies.
Well, I hate it, but we're out of time. Our guest has been Casey Seiler, state editor and Capitol Bureau chief for the Albany Times-Union, the guy who breaks the news. Casey, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org, and NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decision to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.